All right. Hello, everyone, and a very happy Wednesday. It's funny because I'm going to change it to gallery view, but right now I have it in, everybody except for Don that has their camera on is in La Vida. Isn't that funny? Yeah, so they're testing the sirens today. I guess you guys have heard them, those of you that are here in La Vida. They'll be testing the sirens until 2. So it's possible that while I'm sharing, you'll hear sirens in the background. I don't know. They've done it about 4 or 5 times. They've gone off in the last half hour, so they might be done. So I'm going to play one of my favorite songs. How does that sound? It's from Jesus Christ Superstar. And the name of the song is Gethsemane.
Will no one stay awake with me, Peter, John, James? Will none of you wait with me, Peter, John, James? I only want to say, if there is a way, take this cup away from me, for I don't want to taste its poison, feel it burn me, I have changed. I'm not as sure as when we started. Then I was inspired. Now I'm sad and tired. Listen, surely I've exceeded expectations. Tried for 3 years, seems like 30. Could you ask as much from any other man? But if I die, see the saga through and do the things you ask of me, let them hate me, hit me, hurt me, nail me to the tree. I'd want to know my God. I'd want to know my God. I'd want to see my God. Why I should die? Would I be more noticed than I ever was before? Would the things I've said and done matter anymore? I'd have to see my Lord. If I die, what will be my reward? Just a little.
I was inspired. Now I'm sad and tired. After all, I've tried for 3 years. Seems like 90. Why then am I scared to finish what I started? What you started? I didn't start it. God, thy will is hard, but you hold every card. I will drink your cup of poison, nail it to your cross and break me. Before I change my mind.
I just love that song. I think it's brilliant. but we're here now for the Tao Te Ching. And today we are starting chapter 14. So I'll start with the Derek Lynn version. Chapter 14 says, look at it. It cannot be seen. It is called colorless. Listen to it. It cannot be heard. It is called noiseless. Reach for it. It cannot be held. It is called formless. These three cannot be completely unraveled, so they are combined into one. Above it, not bright. Below it, not dark. Continuing endlessly, cannot be named. It returns back into nothingness. Thus, it is called the form of the formless, the image of the imageless. This is called enigmatic, word Regina will have to look up. Confront it. Its front cannot be seen. Follow it. Its back cannot be seen. Wield the Tao of the ancients to manage the existence of today. One can know the ancient beginning. It is called the Tao axiom. It's pretty clear what's being talked about here. And hopefully this is an easy one for people in awakening together. The interesting thing, you know, we talk about awareness, watching awareness. And specifically, although, you know, other people have used that term as well. I've heard people talk about it a little bit. But specifically, that term was coined by Michael Langford. In fact, he told me that he actually Googled it to make sure that nobody else, had kind of claimed that term. And, he just wanted to put a name on the meditation. But what's interesting to me about the term awareness, watching awareness, is you can't actually watch awareness. Not like we can watch my finger. You know, we can all watch my finger, right? You can watch it. You can't watch awareness like that. Awareness is where the watching is coming from. But what you can do is be aware of awareness. But I think that one of the things that makes meditation complicated is that because we're used to looking with the mind, and the mind looks at objects, what happens for most people when they close their eyes and go into meditation is they're looking for something. You know, they're trying to find that something that is it. And no matter what you find, that's not it. And it doesn't matter what you find. I mean, that's the interesting thing. Anything that you can perceive, anything that you can see is not it. Now, I know I talked a couple times recently. I talked on Sunday night about this, and I mentioned it briefly yesterday. We called it the Buddhist hell because that's the term that's coined for it. Is when you reach that silent state in meditation where there's just silence and you're just aware of this peace, you know, and a lot of people think that's it. And that's not it, because that's still what you're aware of. You're it, you know? I remember when I was a kid, there was a story called The Bluebird of Happiness, and I don't remember all the details, but I remember these kids traveled all over trying to find the Bluebird of Happiness, and everywhere they went, they couldn't find it. It wasn't there every place they went. And then when they got home, it was in their own backyard. It's kind of a similar story. I mean, you know, we've heard it over and over again. You are that which you seek. Anne quoted it in the last hour, quoted St. Francis, what you're looking for is where you're looking from. And sometimes you got to wonder, why is that so dang hard to get? That should be simple. And the only reason that I have found that's so hard to get is because of the habit of looking out. You know, one habit, as far as I can tell, is the problem, the habit of looking out. And this is why there's so much talk about learning to look within. I've been practicing something here. Like right now I look up and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, maybe 6 deer walking by. And what I'm practicing when I see these incredible things here, like the mountains on this side, the deer and the river on this side. One deer just picked up its paw and hit another deer. The deer kind of trotted on a little faster. Oh my goodness, they are. They're all being frisky with each other. Anyway, what I'm practicing when I look out at these things is I'm practicing pausing and noticing that you know, this is where words stop, but I'm going to use the word that everybody else uses, although it's not an accurate word. I am the light by which that is seen. Right? If I look over here at the mountain, I can turn around a little bit. I can see the East Peak from where I'm sitting. And I focus the attention back on me. I am the light in which that is seen. And it seems like this is a really important practice to me. Because like I said, the only thing I can find that causes us to neglect a very simple truth is the habit of looking out. And if the habit of looking out is the problem, then it makes sense that reversing that habit and getting used to paying attention to awareness, being aware that I am the awareness, would be the answer. And I have certainly extended my meditation time. I easily do 2 hours every day now. And then, you know, when there's time, I do longer. But 2 hours is pretty much my minimum, except sometimes on weekends, it's an hour, you know, depending on what the family's doing. But during the Monday through Friday, it's easily 2 hours now. But there's this strong, strong feeling that 2 hours is just a drop in the bucket. Like it's nothing. You know, I can't get up from that 2 hours and go back to that habit of being outward focused. It's just, it's not going to work. So what I find happening is that I have kind of two desires. One desire is to meditate more. And we'll see how that unfolds. You know, right now I'm pretty busy with other things, and that's about what I can do. But one desire is to meditate more. But the other desire is, when I'm not in meditation, to continue to reflect on myself as awareness. Not as a thought. Noticing that the seeing is coming from here. I mean, right now, you know, I can look and I can see these bodies that I call Shauna and Regina and Cheryl and Don and Jacqueline, right? Right now, some others have turned off their cameras. I can see these bodies. But I can also notice that I see these bodies, right? It's a simple practice. You can do it anytime, anywhere, when you're putting away food. I bought some canned goods this morning, putting away the canned goods. I can notice that I see the canned goods. And just kind of stay connected to that I see with my eyes open. I see, right? I also like to notice that I feel. You know, like if I pick up this iced tea, it's a little cold. Actually, for me, it's not I feel. I would be lying. I've kind of dropped back from that. It's more like I see the body feeling. That's really my experience. The hands feel. I am aware of what the hands are feeling. I see the body feeling. But I like to pause and notice that that's coming from me. Not me, the mind, not me, the body. Awareness. And if we go back and we look at what Derek Lynn has said here, he starts off with, look at it. And then he says, it cannot be seen. That's kind of like awareness watching awareness. You know, you can't really do it. But the point is, it's placing attention there. Instead of having your attention be out on some object, right? It's placing attention there, just being aware. Being aware of awareness. Look at it. It cannot be seen. And I've talked before that different people have asked me if different things were it. And you know, when people tell me they have these experiences, like they saw this bright light, or they experienced this unfathomable, I can't say that today, peace, you know, some image that seemed really holy to them. You know, I never say that's not it. I don't want to discourage anyone. So I smile and say, congratulations on your experience. But when I'm teaching like this, I gotta say, that's not it. You know? Who or what saw the bright light? Who or what was aware of the unfathomable peace? There, I said it that time. You know, who or what was aware of the vision type experience that came during meditation? See, you're it. What's the one thing you can never escape? You. It's the one thing you can never be separate from. You're it. And as we become more and more aware of that, and again, we're not talking about the body because you can see the body, right? And he's very, very clear here. Look at it. It cannot be seen. And in fact, the next line says, it is called colorless, right? As you become more and more aware of yourself as that instead of as this, at least my experience, I will say my experience. I imagine that yours is the same. But let me just talk about me. My experience, as I become more and more aware of myself as awareness rather than this, I feel watching more, if that makes any sense. I feel watching. Even while acting is happening, I still feel the watching. Right? The watching becomes a more prominent experience. I also find that there are just so many things that fall away from really caring about. And what I mean by that is just whatever is primarily okay. And I use the word primarily because I, you know, anybody who knows me knows that I'm still pretty responsible to doing my job, you know, and if something has to be fixed, we fix it, you know. But it comes from a different place. It comes from, this is just my role, rather than, you know, this has to be this way, right? This is just my role. You know, this is what, but there are so many things I couldn't even tell you, so many things I notice on a regular basis that I don't care. And it's not apathetic. It's just okay with whatever is. Right? Just whatever. Yeah, that's fine. And that comes from watching, from the feeling of the watching, from the watcher, but it's actually not a watcher, even though people use that word a lot. It's the watching, right? It comes from the watching. The watching is watching. And it doesn't have concerns. It doesn't need things to be a certain way. And to watch the watching, to be aware of the watching, makes the sense of the watching grow stronger. But one thing that seems also really important is in order to at least get into the habit of watching and to some degree to maintain the habit of watching, we have to slow down. Because the looking out is the conditioning. And if we get moving too fast, that we just fall back into the conditioning in kind of an unconscious way. So making sure we can move about slowly is important, I think. And the only way to make sure we can move about slowly is to remove everything unnecessary from our lives. Really start having a discernment there. Because if you have too many things in your day, you're going to feel like you can't move around slowly because you got to get this all done. Right? And then the watching is just going to go out the window. You'll be back with, and one thing that's really happened for me, and it's getting stronger and stronger and stronger, is I can feel the watching. You know, it feels, I can feel it. You see, it kind of feels back here. And I can feel the outward looking. It gets up here. You know? So if my attention starts going into the outward looking, I can feel it. It's like a tension. It's like a tightness. It's like a constraint. And it's in the front part of my brain. But the watching is more on the edges of the back of the brain, you know? It'll be interesting to find out if this stuff can really be seen. One of the things that's happening is a guy, I think his name was Jeffrey Martin, but I could be wrong because I'm not looking at my email right now. But a guy, I think is actually his admin assistant or his publicist, wrote to me and asked me to interview him for one of our satsangs. And what he has done is he has studied the brain of enlightened people. And I felt strongly, like, you know, inside, yes, yes. And I even told Jacqueline, I felt like it was my job to do it because usually she does the satsang. So I've ordered his book. It should be coming this week. It was just released on March 31, and I'll be interviewing him in June, I think, for the satsang. But the interesting thing is, you know, like when I'm talking about how I can feel this and I can feel this, I kind of wonder what I'm going to find in that brain book. Like, are we going to find that enlightened people's brain lights up differently and is used differently? Because it feels different, right? Getting up here and being relaxed back here feels a lot different. So I'm curious to see if the brain lights up differently, but we'll find out what that book says when it comes. The book, by the way, is called The Finder. If anybody else wants to read it with me, it's called The Finder. I haven't read it yet, so I can't comment on it other than I'm going to read it. So again, look at it. It cannot be seen. It is called colorless. Listen to it. It cannot be heard. It is called noiseless. You know, spiritual people sometimes just get too spiritual. You guys know what I mean, right? You know, like, I think it's fine that, you know, like Muji uses the word om to center himself into meditation and even to bring himself out. And that is fine. He is definitely not focused on the word om. He's focused on awareness. But I know people who are focused on the om and they think that that's it. That's it. A sound. They call it the sound of the universe, the sound of the universe being birthed, the sound of God. You know, and some even get to the point where they can hear the om in their brain without saying om. They just hear the om. They hear the hum of the universe and they think that's it. But that can't be it. Who's aware of the hum of the universe? Who's aware of the sound of om that's always with me? Right? You're it. You're it. You're it. You're it. Not anything that you're aware of. You. So it doesn't matter what sounds you hear. They're not it. Don't be fooled by pretty images or unusual sounds. In a way, I have a friend who died from this mistake. She was some of y'all's friends too, Cheryl Valentine. Actually, Cheryl. I've gotten used to saying Cheryl. Cheryl Valentine. She started hearing what she told me was a little girl singing in her mind. She could hear a little girl singing, and she said it was a familiar tune, but she couldn't quite place it. And she started smelling flowers. And she asked me if I had these experiences when I started awakening. I said, no, no, I didn't. And she went to some spiritual person, And that spiritual person told her, yes, you're awakening. It's your, you guys might know, your, it starts with a P, some gland, your pituitary gland. Let's go ahead and unmute yourself and say it.
Pituitary.
Pituitary gland. And I had a bad feeling about this. I mean, I was like, oh, Cheryl was, I mean, I really had a bad feeling about this. Cheryl was certain she was awakening because of these experiences, and this other person told her she was awakening. By the time her husband dragged her to the doctor, and he dragged her, she had stage 4 brain cancer. And it got bad quick, and she died within 6 months. But I want to look at that confusion that Cheryl had, because it's an important confusion for us to look at. She thought that these phenomena were it. She thought she was awakening because she was experiencing phenomena. A singing that was with her, smelling flowers. It was just a tumor pushing up against her brain. Phenomena are never it. Never. You're it. You know, my brain's not too bad now, but when I first entered into menopause, I don't know how many years ago it was, I'll guess 7. I don't really keep track. The doctor asked me, when was your last period? I laugh. I don't even know what year it was. I couldn't tell you that. Save my life. It's not here anymore. I can tell you that. Sometime, a long time ago. But when I first entered into menopause, my brain quit working. And a friend of mine who's a nurse said that's typical for some people. They call it menopause brain. It lasted about 3 years. And it was a little bit like having Alzheimer's. I mean, I couldn't remember things that you should easily be able to remember. One example that really stands out for me was I had a blouse on that was a new blouse. And somebody said, oh, what a nice blouse. Where did you get that? And I had no friggin' idea. I couldn't remember if I bought it, if it was a gift. I mean, I had no idea, but I knew it was only about a week old. It was a new blouse, but I couldn't remember. And my mind was really bad during that period of time. Michael Langford even got concerned about me. But I actually loved that period of time. Because what I was aware of was that I was aware of the brain not working like it used to. So I knew I wasn't the brain. I think up until that point, I had a fear that really what we are is the brain, and that awareness comes from the brain, and that when the brain dies, we die, right? I had this fear. You guys are shaking your head, so maybe that thought's crossed your mind too. But when my brain quit working for 3 years, the awareness did not change, and I could see that. The awareness didn't deteriorate. The brain deteriorated. The memory deteriorated, right? The being able to retrieve words deteriorated, right? But the awareness was exactly the same as it had always been, and I could see that, and I loved that. I did not deteriorate. The brain deteriorated. And then the brain started coming back. I don't think it's 100%, but it's 90% back. I'm pretty sharp again, you know? I got to watch that happen too. So I'm not the brain, because I watched it go, you know, downhill and back uphill again. So what am I? Well, the Tao Te Ching says, look at it. It cannot be seen. It is called colorless. Listen to it. It cannot be heard. It is called noiseless. Reach for it. It cannot be held. It is called formless. And yet, it is called you. It is you. It is you. It is you. Right? It's not something else. It's you. And then it says, these three cannot be completely unraveled, so they are combined into one. the colorless, the noiseless, the formless is all the same thing, right? Another thing that's interesting is, you know, if we got together and we did a little exercise. First, let's say I had a bunch of questions about politics, maybe about health, about what foods are best for you, what foods aren't, what temperatures are more comfortable, you know, just a whole bunch of random questions. And we each answered those questions alone and compared our answers. Our answers would not be the same. Our answers would not be the same because our bodies, our minds, and our personalities are not the same, right? But if I then started asking questions about awareness, and of course, this would have to be a group of people who've paid attention to awareness. Some people would be like, huh? But if I started asking questions about awareness, our answers would be exactly the same. That's amazing to me. I mean, that's, you know, that's amazing to me. There is no difference between Shauna and Regina and Don and Jacqueline and Jay and Cindy and Andy and Linda. Who else is here? Oh, and Regina. Oh, and Cheryl. Cheryl's in the dark. I missed her over there in the dark. There's no difference. At all. That's amazing to me. You know, there's so many differences between bodies, minds, and personalities, but the awareness is exactly the same. And then, if you have a logical mind at all, that's where you have room to start questioning, is it possible that it really is the same awareness? If we can't find any difference in what I would call my awareness and what you would call your awareness, is it possible that it's the same awareness, just shining through different, you know, little bodies, yeah, little portals? And then if you pause and look at that just a little bit longer, that makes us one, guys. I mean, really. Right? That makes us one. We aren't friends. We aren't acquaintances. We're the same one. And that's where love comes from. Love comes from that contemplation. Love never comes from the contemplation of differences. You may think you love someone, you know, be attracted to someone, think you love someone, but that's okay. There'll be a day when you think you hate them too. You know, that's not it. Right? It's when you contemplate awareness and then contemplate that awareness is the same with each one and then contemplate it's the same awareness. Really contemplate it deeply. Then you fall in love with everyone. And it doesn't matter what those differences are. So again, the Tao says, look at it. It cannot be seen. It is called colorless. Listen to it. It cannot be heard. It is called noiseless. Reach for it. It cannot be held. It is called formless. These three cannot be completely unraveled, so they are combined into one. It continues, but you know what I want to do? We're running out of time. I just kind of want to see what some other translators do with this. I'm going to sneak over to Stephen Mitchell because he tends to stray the furthest from the way other people translate.
Hey, Regina.
Yeah.
Don asked a question that you may want to see that I think might be helpful to my Gentle Healing Year One group.
Okay. What about the ACIM that talks about the goal? Oh, yeah. That's a great question. ACIM tells you.
There's actually two questions.
Okay. Well, let me answer this one first then. ACIM tells you that love which is its one of its words for reality, is out of scope for the course. Do you know what that means? It means the course isn't even trying to help you awaken. And that's really smart, because the course is a pretty intellectual thing. I mean, it's not going to really help you awaken. What the course is trying to help you to do is to bring you to a point where you aren't as obsessed with the world and thought as you used to be, and now you can start to turn your attention to awakening. You know, it's kind of like there's this thick forest, and the course is trying to help cut down the trees so that maybe you can find the sun. And the course is very clear that that's what it's trying, that it does. I mean, it tells you in a few different places, and it's amazing to me how many people miss that. Right? So that's the answer to that question. So is there not peace that when you feel, when you are practicing awareness, watching awareness? Yes, there is peace that you feel. It's just the peace isn't it, you are. That's what you got to be clear on, right? See, we too often, you know, grab onto some kind of an object, and even the perception of peace is a type of a very subtle object, but a type of object, and we keep missing what it is. It's you, the one who's aware of the peace. Sure, the peace is there, but you know what? It's still you on your most frantic day. The awareness is unchanged, whether it's peace. It's easier to be aware of awareness in peace than when you're all caught up in your frantic mind. But the awareness is unchanged. It's the same awareness. The same awareness is aware of your frantic mind as is aware of the peace. And in fact, some people have woken up directly from the frantic mind. Eckhart Tolle and Byron Katie, for example. Right? Peace is not a requirement, because awareness is always present. Does answer your questions? Good, good, good. Okay, so let's have a peek at Stephen Mitchell. Look and it can't be seen. Listen and it can't be heard. Reach and it can't be grasped. Above, it isn't bright. Below, it isn't dark. And these are, you know, these same lines were in Derek Lynn as well. This is pretty important too, in a way. Above it isn't bright, below it isn't dark. What this is really trying to say is there is no form, there is no quality, there is nothing you can point to that's it. And it's interesting because, you know, I don't hear arguing and awakening together. I think it's just our culture, which is great. But if you get around the spiritual types that argue and debate, people even argue and debate over whether it's light or dark. Because guess what? Some scriptures describe it as darkness, and some scriptures describe it as light. So they argue about that depending on which scripture they're attached to. This is really clear. It's not either. You know, there's no form you can put to it. You know, these are just symbols that people use. Some people use the term light, like the light of awareness. And some people use the term dark, like the darkness of mystery, the unknown, right? But they're just symbols. And it's silly to argue over, is it light or is it dark? This morning, I was listening to Nisargadatta, or quotes from Nisargadatta, and I heard Nisargadatta say that the I am is light, and the absolute is dark, right? It's just symbols. It's not true. Above it isn't bright. Below it isn't dark. Seamless, unnameable. It returns to the realm of nothing. I love the symbol that a week and a half ago, when I was playing all those videos during the guiding light, I can't remember if it was a Rupert Spira or Locke Kelly, but one of them, I think it was Rupert Spira, talked about if a teenage boy is watching the match, the soccer match, on the TV, and the mom walks in and says, you know, what are you watching? He'd say, I'm watching the match. But if the TV is turned off, his eyes are staring at the same screen. And if his mom comes in and says, what are you watching? He'd say nothing. Right? But the nothing is in comparison to the something. Again, it's another symbol. The nothing is in comparison to the something. And if you watch awareness, if you pay attention to awareness, you know, compared to staring at your thoughts, it's nothing. But it's not really nothing because it's life awareness. It's you. You know what I mean? So you need to take these words lightly. You know, I've had people tell me more than once that the word nothing scares the bejesus out of them. Well, then are you scared of you, of your life energy? Because that's what the nothing's pointing to. It's just a word. But you can definitely see that it's a great word, you know, nothing, emptiness, right? Compared to the habit of being lost in mind and maybe feeling, right? I mean, it's definitely open, nothing, emptiness by comparison. But it's not nothing. It's you. You're not nothing. You know that, right? You know you're not nothing. But you're not a something either, like the body is a something, right? You're not a something either. Better just to say you are, and maybe not put either descriptor after it. Form that includes all forms, image without an image, subtle beyond all conception. I'm just looking to see if there's anything to say about this. I don't think I have anything to say about it, so I'll move on. Approach it, and there is no beginning. Follow it, and there is no end. I'll tell you, this is something I've been contemplating lately because I did listen to Muji's The Invitation. I played it here in the sanctuary that day that Dawn wasn't here. I played it during Dawn's half hour because she wasn't here. So I played The Invitation. And in The Invitation, he has people close their eyes and focus on awareness. And then he asks them questions and he says, answer these questions. You know, so one of the questions might be, does it have a color? No. Does it make a sound? No, right? And everybody's looking at awareness and they're answering the questions. And I was able to answer all those questions too from my own experience. But there were two questions he asked that my mind said, I don't know. You know, just in self-honesty. One was, does it have a beginning? And does it have an end? Or maybe he said, was it born and does it die? I'd have to go back and listen to see which question he asked. But I kept my mouth shut. I didn't say yes or no during that part of the meditation because I don't know. All I know is it's here now. But if I keep watching it now, and again, by comparison, I can watch, you know, like let's pretend like my hand is awareness, okay? The palm of my hand is awareness. I can watch a thought come and go. I can feel the sensations arise and fall away. I can sit there in a two-hour meditation and watch all of these changes, and this never changes. A thought is born and it dies. A sensation is born and it dies, right? But this, at least in my experience, is always present and isn't born and doesn't die. And that's the only honest answer I can give about that. Like, I've never seen it begin. I've never seen it end. And everything else in my experience has begun and ended. So I can at least say that honestly. Right? So approach it, and there is no beginning. Follow it, and there is no end. You can't know it, but you can be it. Nisargadatta says this all the time. You can't know it, but you can be it. Or he'll say, to know is to be. Right? You can't know it. Like I can think I know the Regina personality. And the reason I say I think I know, and you would think that if I knew the Regina personality, it would be me that knew it. But that's just not true. Because everybody has a different perception of the Regina personality, including Regina herself, right? Again, if we all sat down and really answered some detailed questions about the Regina personality, we wouldn't describe the same personality. And it's not that I'm more right. I just have a different perception of the Regina personality. So I can think I know the Regina personality. I think I know some things about her. And you guys can think you know your personality, know some things about it, some descriptive things about it. But you can't know awareness in that same way. You know, you can't say awareness likes chocolate peanut butter. Right? That's Regina. She's the one who likes chocolate and peanut butter. Right? There are some things that it seems like you can know. For example, you can know that it's open. You can't find anything about awareness that ever closes. You know, you can also think you know God. Some people do. You know, like if you go talk to a Baptist or somebody, they can tell you all about God. They think they know God. But again, that's only thinking they know, because if you get a bunch of people together and ask a bunch of questions about God, you're going to get different gods, right? But see, awareness, there's just, you know, there's not much you can say about it. It's present. It's open. It's what I am. I mean, what can you say about it? There's just not much to say about it. So in that way, it's a mystery, and it will always be a mystery. You know, like we know to some degree that awareness is the cause of everything in the world. But nobody really knows exactly how that works. We know attention on thought manifests, but it's not like, you know, a person can live their whole life worrying about getting cancer and never get cancer. You know, you can't pin it down how awareness manifests into all things. You can't ever know these things. They're forever mysteries. The mind can't know them. The knower can't know these things. So mystery is a beautiful, beautiful word not to be overlooked when describing what I am. Awareness. You can't know it, but you can be it. I described this earlier by being the watcher. By taking the time to notice that I am the seer of those bare trees, because their leaves haven't grown yet for the year, for the spring, so they're still bare trees, you know? Noticing that I, you know, it's in my presence that that hawk is flying right now, you know? And keep paying attention to that. And then the watcher in you will naturally develop, not really develop, become more forward. And you will be the watcher. And in that way, you know it, from being it, from experiencing it. You can't know it, but you can be it at ease in your own life, right? Definitely. Okay, let's make sure. Oh, that's Philip Miranda. Hold on, I got to answer this phone call. Okay, I'll see you soon. Okay. All right. All right. All right. Thank you. Okay. I'll be here. All right. Bye. That was Philip Miranda. Philip Miranda is a man that has filled a bunch of sandbags for me and is delivering them today. Sandbags are very important for someone who lives, you know, just a few yards from that river out there. So that was pretty important. I was really, really happy to find Philip Miranda, because I was wondering how this Regina body was going to fill 150 sandbags with sand and get them here. So he's my savior this week. He said he'll be here in about an hour. So let's see, where was I? You can't know it, but you can be it at ease in your own life. Yeah, there is more ease to life when you're the watcher, obviously. You know, a whole lot more ease to life. Listen to this. Just realize where you come from. That's just another way of saying just realize what you are. Right? Just keep that realization present in your mind. This is the essence of wisdom. And that's time for me to end. So thanks for hanging out with me, guys. I'll text you I'll actually put it in the room, Don, in just a second, a title.